We did take up our tithes and offerings, didn't we? That's good. Pastor Nigel and Andrea are away. They're currently on leave. Well, Pastor Nigel is, Pastor Andrea's still away, but she's on the way back at some time. And so Pastor Nigel has invited Richard Wilkinson to speak today. Richard spoke at C3 Wellard last Sunday night. Tonight we have Sheila Asherian speaking at C3 Wellard. You should hear her speak. She's amazing. She's really good. But today, here at C3 Fremantle, we have the amazing Richard Wilkinson. Come on up, Richard. Richard is married with four children. And maybe Richard could tell us a little bit about your profession as well. Thank you.
Oh, hi, everyone. Yeah, like Charlie said, I was asked to come up and preach. I'm one of a few people who Nigel has approached to take a plunge into preaching. And it's a little daunting. This is the second one I have done in, well, about 20 years. So, thank you for having me. I'd like to thank Nigel and Andrew for their support and their belief that I won't say anything strange up here. Emma and I, Emma's down there, have four kids in this church. We've been here for about 10 years, and before that we were at C3 Watson in Canberra for about 5 years, I think. So we've been in the C3 movement for longer than I realised until I've actually said it out loud. My current work, I basically work with companies that do stuff. My previous job was working with, when I was over East, was working with companies in the digital content area, which is video games, film, television, mobile apps. Back then, apps were different. We didn't have smartphones. We had a huge range of awful little phones. But I met some amazing companies that are doing some amazing things, exporting worldwide, developing things which are world-leading, and there's a lot of energy that comes with that. And my current job touches on that. It sort of flavours some of the things I'll be talking about with this this talk, which I haven't told you what it is, but it's David and Goliath. That's what Nigel gave me to talk about. So what I'd like to do is, I guess, give a little bit of background of David Goliath. I actually assumed everyone knew who David and Goliath were. But what I've realised is that's probably a wrong assumption. If you were brought up in a church, you probably know the David and Goliath story. But if you were outside the church when you were a child, you probably don't know it. I guess the analogy that that I could have for the David and Goliath story, there's probably a lot of movies. Rocky, Karate Kid, Kung Fu Panda, if you're a bit younger. The story often is that people, this underdog story of the small David going up against a giant like Goliath and beating all odds. That was a story that I was raised with as a kid. The story of, with God, even the smallest David can beat the massive giant Goliath. Being asked to talk about David and Goliath, I went back and reread the verses that relate to it, which is in 1 Samuel 17. So what I thought I'd do is give you a brief rundown of what happened in it, because it's quite interesting, and I think it's more than just an underdog story. I actually think there's a lot more lessons that we can take for our everyday life. So it all starts with the Philistines. They show up one day on the hill across from the Israelites. They camp there and set up camp. On the other side of that hill, the other side of the valley, I should say, is the Israelites, and they notice that the Philistines are there. Every morning and every evening, the Philistines come out, and in the head of it is Goliath. Now, Goliath is an enormous character in the Bible. I looked it up. He's about 2.8 meters tall. So he's about as tall as the world's tallest man, I think at the moment. So, enormous fella. He comes out and mocks them. They all line up. There's lots of mocking, lots of yelling, and they all go back to camp on either hill. At about the 40-day mark, we're introduced to a character called David. Now, David is the youngest of 8 sons, and his dad sends him down to give some food to his brothers who are in the battle lines. David comes down. At about the time when they start lining up for battle, so the two armies on either side of the valley line up for battle, all yelling their war chants. David sees this and he wanders down, which I found a little bit interesting. We'll talk about this a bit later. Starts talking to his brothers. As this happens, Goliath comes out and David sees Goliath. And he's like, oh, okay. And he hears all the chatter that's going on amongst the army. Things like, whoever beats Goliath will become rich. Whoever beats Goliath will get the hand of King Saul's daughter. And whoever beats Goliath, their family won't have to pay taxes ever again. All these things sound really quite nice. I'd like to not pay taxes ever again, but that's okay. David then goes around and asks other people. He wanders around the army going, you know, what will they get if they beat Goliath? What will they get if they beat Goliath? They all say the same thing. They say, whoever gets it will get riches and fortune, basically. His brother catches him and says, what are you doing? Get out of here. Bear in mind, he's the youngest brother of 8. He probably is very naughty. So his brother says, go, get away. I know what you're like. You're just being naughty. Go away. David doesn't, maybe because he's naughty. He keeps on going around and asking everyone, what would I get? Finally, he's asked so many people that King Saul's men see what he's doing, and they bring him up to King Saul. Now, King Saul is looking for options. He comes up, sees his kid, and then says, basically, you're too young. No, you can't beat Goliath. That guy out there, he's a warrior, seasoned warrior, and you're too young. Now, David goes, I'm a shepherd, and I've fought lions and bears, and I've killed them. God's helped me kill them and win. He saved me each time. Saul looks at him and says, okay then, you can go out and fight Goliath. Saul puts on a whole bunch of armor, gives David a sword, dresses him up as a soldier, and David starts walking and then goes, nah. Now, being a shepherd, wearing armor that doesn't quite fit right and not used to it, he basically looks at him and says, nah, I'm not used to this. I can't wear this. So he takes it all off, picks up his staff, grabs a few pebbles for his sling, heads out. So he comes out onto the field. Goliath, imagine he's over there, comes out. Goliath sees him and goes, you're coming at me with sticks. Come here so I can crush you. David, the rest of the story is basically David then runs at him, hits him with his sling. Goliath falls face first down onto the ground, crunch. David wanders up to him, pulls out his sword, finishes the job. So kills Goliath, I should probably spell that out. And all the Philistines see this, and they're like, oh, this is really bad. And they flee all the way back to Goliath's hometown. So there's a bit of background. I think what I'd like to now do is dig a little bit into them. There's three main characters of this, which I'd like to talk about. Now, the first one is King Saul. So when I was younger, I guess the childhood story I had was King Saul was afraid. He didn't fight Goliath because he was scared. And that sounded reasonable as a kid. Goliath was a big monster. The king was scared to do anything. But the interesting thing is, in the Bible, it mentions the armies of Israel cowering in fear of Goliath. But when you meet King Saul, he seems amazingly calm. He's not worried. He doesn't seem that concerned. I mean, he wants to do something about the problem, but he doesn't really seem to be scared. And then it got me thinking about this, like, why? Why isn't he scared? Now, think about it from his perspective. all the armies are lined up all the way over here, and right back from the battle lines is King Saul. He's under no immediate threat. 40 days, what he's basically seen is his army's been down there, the Philistine army's been down there, and nothing much has really happened. They've just been yelling at each other. So from King Saul's point of view, he basically is just sort of ignoring the problem. Now, it's pretty easy. This is what I think King Saul represents. He represents this mindset that we have where we go, we see what's happening, and we just go, you know what? The present is a bit too hard. My future is a bit murky. I'll just do what I've been doing for the last, I don't know, few weeks, few months, few years. I'm going to keep doing the same things I've always done and do nothing. Just leave it alone. Ignore the problem. Hopefully it will resolve itself. So he's burying his head in the sand, I guess is the colloquialism we use. In the private sector, a lot of people think about this, but there's a whole field of studies about behavioral economics, and it looks at why do people act irrationally? And one of the things they found is that basically there's a thing called a status quo bias or default bias. Now, what we tend to do when we're faced with new situations, whether or not they're going to have good consequences or bad consequences, we choose to do exactly what we've always done. We weight that much higher than anything else. I guess example they use often is organ donation. So in countries where the organ donation thing is a default, you immediately have to donate your organs and you can opt out of that. Organ donation sits around about 80% of the population. Now, in countries like Australia, where we have to opt into organ donation, we tend not to donate our organs. Maybe at 5 to 10% of the population do. Now, it's interesting. It's very similar populations. The only difference is this default bias. The easiest option of doing nothing creates a massively wild variable in terms of how many people will donate organs. People do it all the time. We do it with everything. We go, you know what? What I'm doing today and what I've done for the last X number of years is much better than doing anything new in the future. I'm not really saying to do change for change's sake, but I guess what we've got to look at is the internal biases, the irrationality about what we're doing. We have to look at why we're not doing something. Is it because we're just so used to doing the things that we've always done that we don't make a change? Or is it, I don't know, is it a fear of the unknown? And then we have to determine what is the best course forward and take action. I have a verse which basically goes along the lines of, I've seen it on Facebook a few times, and they always say it's an Albert Einstein quote. So I dug into that because most things on Facebook are lies. And it isn't, but there have been a lot of people that have quoted very similar things. And I think Albert Einstein did say something similar. And it basically goes along the lines of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. Now, if you want your best life, it doesn't happen by doing exactly the same thing you've done your whole life. Saul's solution for this issue wasn't doing the same thing he's done previously. He was in his tent, join himself, being king, doing the same thing over and over again, and expected that the problem would go away. Another way you can sort of imagine status quo bias is almost like laziness. Now, the Bible has a lot of verses about this. Now, laziness is, I guess, I'll try to define it before I start going into it. It's the continued inability to act when required. It isn't rest. Sometimes we need a rest. We need a rest between when we're doing things. It's a good, healthy, biblical principle. But this is just continuing to rest. Rest, 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 rest. It doesn't stop. So the Bible has lots of verses, in fact. I'll only talk about a few of them. Now, the first one is Proverbs 10, verses 4 to 5. Lazy hands bring poverty, but hardworking hands lead to wealth. Whoever harvests in the summer acts wisely, but the son who sleeps during the harvest is disgraceful. The next one is Proverbs 12:24. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. And the last one is really a story about the talents, Matthew 25, verses 24 to 28. Jesus talks about a landowner who leaves for a while and gives his staff talents, which is like a form of money or investment resources. The only person that really gets in trouble in that one, doesn't see multiplication, is the person who takes that talent and buries it in the backyard because he's afraid of what might happen if he does the wrong thing. The only person who gets in trouble, he does nothing. God really does not like people doing nothing. Everyone, including Saul, hoped that somebody else would come and solve this problem for him. They're all so keen on doing this. Saul got what he wished for, and just like those proverb verses, this was like the first step of really when he lost his kingdom. He lost his wealth. At this point, David was a shepherd. Saul was a king. Later on, it is David who becomes the king. We've got to be careful what we do in terms of, are we backwards facing, thinking about just trying to do the same thing we've always done, or we're going to be future facing. Now, I've got a nice little story. About a week and a half ago, it was the 10th anniversary when the iPhone first got announced. Now, this was, there were other smartphones, but this was really the first of this whole era of smartphones. At the time, everyone had this thing, a little brick. I don't know if I wanted to find one. I know I've got one somewhere, but it's these little candy bar phones from Nokia. They last forever. They have a black and white screen. You could throw it at a wall and it'd probably still work. I'm sure if I found it, it'd probably still have its battery charge going. I'd be able to turn it on. At the time, Nokia, they saw this smartphone come out and they said, that's fine. We're the experts in mobile phones. We know more about mobile phones and the market than anyone else. We're going to keep making phones exactly like how we used to make them. People only want those phones. They want these candy bar phones. They don't want that thing. About 4 years later, the CEO of Nokia got up and basically said, the company's bankrupt and we've been bought out by Microsoft. What they said was, we didn't do anything wrong, but somehow we lost. There's this state of mind when you're so focused in the past, the world moves on and you lose everything. Just like Saul did, just like the Nokia board did. They all cried. They didn't do anything wrong, but they didn't do anything different. And they lost everything. The next character was my favorite character when I was a kid. I mean, who doesn't like Goliath? I mean, we shouldn't. He's a bad guy in it. He mocks God all the time. He mocks the Israelites all the time. But he is massive. As a young boy, I wanted to be him. Now, there's a description of him in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 4. And basically it goes along like this. Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. That doesn't mean anything to anyone because no one ever talks like that. That's about 2.8 meters tall. Now, I've got a picture of The Rock, the actor The Rock. And he stands next to a Chinese basketball player. And it gives you an idea of the height. Now, The Rock is about an inch or two taller than me. And if it pops up, there it is. Now, next to him isn't the tallest man in the world. He's a tall man. He's a Chinese basketball player. He's 2.5 meters tall. So to give you an idea, Goliath was a head taller than him. So enormous fella. Goliath had a bronze helmet, a big bronze helmet stuck on his head, which was pretty common for the Philistines in that era. He wore a coat of mail. The weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels. Again, no one knows what that means. That's about 60 kilos in weight. On top of that, he had his bronze armor on his legs, and he had these massive weapons. He had a javelin between his shoulders, jutting out, and he had a spear. Now, the staff of a spear, they talk about a weaver's beam. Now, the best thing that's an analogy to that is probably a curtain rod, like a thick curtain rod. It's about this thick, and it was about 7 meters long. At the end of that, there was a 6-kilo metal chunk, which was a spearhead. Enormous weapons. His shield was so big that he actually, as he was walking out in front of him, as he was walking, they would have somebody in front carrying the shield. Enormous shield. So what he basically was, I mean, he had his own, probably his own body weight in armor, had these massive weapons, and he was enormously tall. The way I can, I guess, put it into modern terms is, imagine if the Incredible Hulk from the Avengers got special armor made by Iron Man, and you put those two together into one scary monster. He stood in the front of this army, Philistine army, and all the army cowered. They were scared to death of him. But, you know, what I couldn't understand when I was rereading this was, if you had a Hulk, an armored Hulk with giant weapons, why did you spend 40 days doing nothing? Every day for 40 days, twice a day, I should say, he'd get up, walk out in front of the Israelite army, mock them, and then just wander home. 40 days, that's 80 times at least. And that was when David first got introduced. I'm sure he did it a few more times after that. So what was happening is these armies were lining up, yelling at each other, and then nothing was happening. And then it was like a eureka moment, you know, when you sort of go, well, that's weird. And it dawned on me, Goliath was scared. He was really scared. Here he was, enormous, scary person. But look at his armor. Who wears their own body weight in armor? Someone who's scared of getting hurt. Who has an enormous shield? Someone who's scared of getting hurt. And his weapons were so large, they were probably impractical and actually ever been used. I mean, you wouldn't be able to throw that accurately, a spear that big and that heavy accurately. So what he basically had was, he was ready for any normal soldier to come up. He had his big shield, big armor. He'd stand there, deflect anything that came in, and just sort of hit them. But, in fact, there was no fights mentioned in the Bible. There's only one, and that's against a little boy. Well, not a little boy. A boy. David. And he lost that. I mean, what Goliath's whole strategy was very much a present sort of strategy, focused on the now. He was focused on the obstacles ahead. He was looking at his opposition. He was trying to get them to look at him, focus on him as the obstacle, not look past that. He created a Cold War situation where they were so focused on the present that they never actually thought about why they were even there in the first place. They weren't, like, when you go to battle, normally you're trying to take territory, win. You're not there to just yell and scream every day. So all this armor also made me think about how, being covered in this much stuff, he probably wouldn't have much movement. I mean, imagine trying to wear your own body weight in armor. Big plates. I mean, if anyone has gone to the gym, wearing big plates in your arms and legs, you'd be like walking like this. There's probably a reason why he had to have a shield bearer in front of him. He couldn't carry all the stuff that he had. He came out, and the thing that struck me was when David came out onto the field, Goliath basically went to him, come to me so I can kill you. I don't actually think that Goliath could move that well. I think he was slow. I think he was pretty uneasy on his feet. The other thing that I found very interesting was when Goliath got hit, he fell face first onto the ground. Now, when I imagined him as a kid getting hit in the face with a stone, I always imagined him falling backwards. As you get hit in the face, that's a natural instinct. What I think was Goliath fell mainly because of the unexpected nature of everything. The armor made him unbalanced, and he fell down onto the ground face first because he lost balance. Now, to give you an example, I went to the Braveheart kids camp as well one night, and they were all doing a tug of war. Emma was in it. And so on one side, they're all pulling, and the other side, they were pulling as well. And I got to the stage where one side, I won't say which, had won. And they were pulling, pulling, pulling. They won, and they went, yes! And Everyone threw their hands up in the air. Can you guess what happened to the other side? They all fell over because they weren't expecting the other people to let go. The unexpected has a way of making us unbalanced. Just like that, Goliath fought against someone he wasn't expecting. It wasn't a soldier. It was a little kid with a staff and a sling. It caught him off guard. He fell over. Now, this is where his fear and his armor was a hindrance. Once he hit the ground, he was down the ground. Imagine having your own body weight on top of you. Imagine having someone the same weight as you laying on top of you and trying to get up. He couldn't move. That's my guess. David, it describes it. David walks up to this Goliath. He's on the ground. And Goliath is so incapable of moving. He's like an upside-down turtle who's there, can't get back up again. David can reach down, pick out his sword, and then kill him with his own sword, because here's Goliath, so weighed down by all his armor and all his fears and his insecurities that he can't move. I think Goliath is a good example of how we need to look past our obstacles, look past the what people think about us, and really think about why we're out there in the first place in a battle. And focus on that. People were too busy. Goliath was too busy, and the armies were too busy, all focusing on the opposition, that they never actually thought about why we were there, and they never got anywhere. They just stood still. Now, we'll get to David. So we talked about two negative sorts of people, people that we don't want to be like. The last one is David. So we'll finish up with something that's positive. What David saw when he went down in that camp and saw these two armies line up wasn't the opposition like everyone else saw. What he saw was a better life for himself. He didn't see the obstacles. He looked up and saw a vision of his better future. Everyone sort of talked about it, but he was the only one that really sort of went, yep, that's what we need to do. We need to win. In John chapter 4, verse 35, it talks about how you have to lift up your eyes and look at the fields because they're already white with harvest. Sometimes what we... You know, the vision for our future is right in front of us. We just don't see it because we're so busy looking backwards or looking at the instant, immediate situation that we don't think, hey, there's something better in our future. The next thing that David did was, I guess he took a step forward with that. Now, David was, I guess the thing that I also liked about this vision was, David, like I said, was the youngest of eight kids. They weren't a rich family. He saw this vision of being a better financial future for himself. He could have just left it that. Everyone else in the army did. They didn't take any steps forward. He went out there and looked at the vision and analyzed it and thought about it. Now, this stage was really the first step going from a shepherd to being a warrior, but God had a bigger vision for it. God saw his vision was to become a king, the king of Israel. So David stepped out for a very limited part of this vision. He stepped out and went, yep, I'll do this, because he saw the small vision. God had a longer-term vision for him. There's another story in Luke chapter 5, verse 4, where Jesus comes up to Simon, who's a fisherman. Simon's been out all night and basically hasn't caught anything. And Jesus says to him, cast your nets out there. And Simon could have gone, well, we've been fishing all night. All night's been wasted. I don't want to waste any more time. He could have said, there's no one else out there. If there were good fish out there, other people would be there. But instead he just said, yes. Simon went, yep, I want some more fish. I'll listen to God. So he went out there, caught so many fish that other boats had to come and help him. Now he stepped out in that small vision of, let's get some fish for tonight. Let's listen to God. But really that was the first step. It wasn't the end game wasn't the fact that he got all his fish. It was really the first step for him becoming a disciple, a much bigger and more important role. God wants us to make these little steps, step towards these visions that we have, but God has a much bigger vision for us. What I also liked was that David would go around and ask everyone about this vision he saw. He asked so many people. He really dug into it. He didn't just go, yep, I've got this vision. He contemplated it. He went to everyone and said, hey, what about this? What about this? What about this? He mulled it over, thought about it, really put a lot of time into it. Now, I think one of the big problems that we have these days, not just looking up, but we're so distracted. We tend to be so busy, have so many hobbies, so many distractions. We have Facebook, we have video games, movies, TV shows. We can spend so much time looking at stuff that we don't actually ever even think about our future or about our lives. What we need to do is, David looked up, saw what the opportunity there, saw the better future for himself, but also spent time thinking about it. We don't spend enough time thinking about these things, so we need to put time aside to do this contemplation, to think about how we're doing life, what we're doing it for. Now, the other thing that David does extremely well is every time some obstacles come in place, he puts God at the heart of it. Now, as he's asking people, first his brother comes up to him and says, what are you doing? Get out of here. And he doesn't listen to his brother. He has a vision already. He's moving towards it. He comes up to King Saul, and King Saul says to him, you're too young. And he goes, God's with me. I can do this. Convinces King Saul to let him go out and fight a monster. And it's amazing. And then I can imagine, as he's going out into the field, and there's Goliath, and imagine you're David, and then you hear this. Because you got not only a giant, but a guy covered in armor. Extremely big, heavy thing. And you're standing there, and there's this massive monster there. And he says, come to me so I can grind you up and feed you to the animals. That would be daunting, terrifying. Yeah, much like being up here. Probably more so, in fact. But again, at the heart of his belief structure is God. He's like, no. With God. And it's always with God. God is there with him. Because sometimes when we're facing these things that are coming up before us, the only thing that can get us going forward is two things, faith and action. You're going, okay, faith, God's going to do something for me, and action. I'm going to step forward and put faith into action because that is what God calls us to do. I don't know, if I was going up against that monster, I don't know. I'm hoping that I'll just go, yep, I'm just going to do it. because it is a tricky thing, having that faith to be able to keep moving forwards through the obstacles and seeing past those obstacles. Now, David, the last thing I like about David really is it's about who he was. Now, when King Saul came forward and said to him, you're too young, but I'm going to let you go forwards, he dressed him up like a soldier. Now, David tried this out, and in the end he went, I'm not the soldier. This isn't who I am. One thing that David had that was really going for him was his security in who he was. God had taught him who he was, and given a vision, given him training through his being a shepherd. He killed bears. Bears are 300 kilos. They're enormous things. God had invested in him to be exactly where he was, to be exactly the right solution for that problem. Now, if David had gone out to fight Goliath as a soldier with a sword, he wouldn't have won. Goliath was thrown off balance by something different. David would have come up to him, and he would have been a little, fairly young, completely unsure with a sword, and gone like that. Goliath would have just gone, yep, my shield's taken all that, and would have just gone crunch. David would have been dead. David was secure in who he was and accepting who he was. Now, God has a vision for everyone, a long-term plan. Where you are and who you are right now is specific to you. He calls you to your best life. He doesn't call you to be your neighbor's best life. He has a vision for your life, which is unique to you. You're a unique creation. Now, God hadn't called David to be a soldier on that field. He called him to be a shepherd on that field fighting against Goliath. And just like a shepherd, he won against him because he was the person he was supposed to be. He didn't pretend to be anything. He embraced his destiny as the person that God had made him. we need to appreciate that God has a vision for us. Before you were formed in the womb, God knew who you were. He had set up you apart in all of creation to be that unique individual. We need to appreciate that. So in conclusion, I guess, the David and Goliath story isn't really just this underdog story. It's about how we face everyday challenges. There's all these things that will hold us back, and we can be like Saul. We can think, here's a problem, here's an opportunity. It's hard. I'm just going to do what I've done before. I've got a busy life. I'm going to do what I'm always doing. I haven't got time for this. Or you can be like Goliath, and all you can see is the obstacles. All you can see is the problems ahead of you, and you won't do anything. You just stand in the same spot until at some point, you know, it doesn't work anymore. Or you can be like David, this future-focused person who's secure in who you are, your unique strengths and weaknesses, that puts God at the center of who your, you guess, your own destiny, and then says, yep, I can do it. I'll give it a go. I might not feel like I'm ready. I might look at the obstacles and go, what on earth? I have no idea I'm going to beat these, but I'll give it a go. We need to change our mindset from being this old, you know, the old way of thinking to this new way of thinking. There's a lot of verses about putting away your old life and embrace this new life, but it is hard. But each day we need to, our tomorrow self has to be better than the today self. God wants us to be better each day. So what I guess the homework I have for you is this week, look around yourselves, look up, look about. God has got opportunities for you in your life. He will show you things of what your future can be. And it doesn't necessarily have to be this huge thing. In David's case, his initial vision was just financial security. He stepped out in that. God has a bigger vision, but what he wants us to do is take a step out into that vision, into that future that he set for you. A small step can set you on a long path, and God has provision for you. If you, as you're praying and as you're thinking about and looking up, you might not get a vision straight away. You might, you might be thinking, well, hasn't come yet. but there is a greater vision here. I mean, this church was part of a vision. Wellard Church was part of a vision. Port Care was part of a vision. People stepped out into that. And there's an ongoing, other people have visions we can all share. We can be like the other fishermen helping Luke in that fishing boat, all joining in and helping other visions. We have a vision and dreams month, the next month, where we're going to be praying about this. But this is a simple, this is a thing you can do in your everyday life. Take time. Don't be busy all the time. Take some time to think, to reflect, and to look. And remember, God has a plan for you. You are unique. You are where you are because, you know, that's why God created you in the first place and why he didn't make you identical to your next-door neighbor. Stop looking at other people and just embrace who you are. Okay.
Come on. Come on. That was good, wasn't it? That was really good. Come on, let me see your heads nodding. Those for yes, those for no. Hands up if you thought that was great. Fantastic.
Thank you, Richard.
You're a champion, mate. Well done. That is awesome. That is fantastic.
There will be other guest speakers at a later stage, hopefully.
Okay, everybody, let's stand. I'm not going to leave it right there. I'm going to ask people, if you while Richard is sharing that story and you're like, yep, that sounds like me, I'm going to ask you to take some action. I'm going to ask you to come out the front. And I'm going to get Richard to pray for you. Okay? And so can we play? And while we do that, come on out. Come out now. Don't hold back. Don't hesitate. Don't stand in the in in that fear zone, take a step out. Come on. Come to the front. I'm going to pray for you. I'm just going to pray. God bless you. God favor you. And God give you a vision that you will see clearly in Jesus' name. Hallelujah. You know, the Bible says, I'm just going to take a little bit of a different tag here. So come, don't hesitate. He who hesitates misses out. Very good. Okay. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life.